We're nearing the end of our Limud of Asagas Gvul. We'll probably move to Ani Mahapech Bacharar next. So, just a few major topics left to go. Two of them we're going to do this week. One, we'll start a second one, probably do more work on it next week. The first is the question of the Gabila. I don't know exactly what the word means. I'm not sure what language it's in. Hebrew, it's spelled Gimel Aleph Beis Yud Lamed Hey. It's probably more of historical interest than practical interest today, but we'll see a Pesach Tshuva about it. This was a very controversial, very vehemently debated topic in the time of the early Sephardic Achronim and later Ashkenazic Achronim. So just to give some introduction and background to what we're talking about here, the Gabila was a tax, basically. A local Jewish community would attempt to impose a tax burden on non-residents who were transient or doing business in the city. There were apparently different motivations for it. Sometimes they felt it just wasn't fair that they were benefiting from the city, the infrastructure, the populace, and it was only fair they should pay their fair share, as people say, and they should pay their share of the taxes. Sometimes they felt they were actually taking away the business from the local people. That's what the whole Asagas Gvul is all about, the upset or resentment to people who are taking away business. Sometimes they just felt that the needs of the taxes and the different tzedakas they were collecting for were just overwhelming. They needed contributions from people. As I just suggested, sometimes the Gabila was simply a tax for the government. Sometimes it was a question of raising money for tzedakas, Talmud Torah, Pidyon Shvuyim, Bikur Cholim. So all these things are discussed under the general heading of the Gabila. So more or less, the bottom line is what it was an attempt by a local community to impose its will on non-residents. Now, we know from history as well as from the Talmudic sources, Rishonim and Achronim, the Jewish communities had a fair amount of autonomy. In terms of taxation, they would be able to do both. They would, in terms of the local community, they would assess taxes on their members to raise money the community needed, to build a shul, to other things the community needed. Additionally, the government would pass along taxes. The government, instead of taxing each individual citizen directly, the government would often tell the community, your community is being assessed 10,000 rubles, it's your job, figure out how to get it, you divide it up among yourselves. So any of these sorts of taxes the community had, either their own needs, tzedakah needs, communal needs, or finding some way to pay the government, all these things would be things that the community has to raise money, and they normally would raise it from their own members. The question of the Gabila is, did they have the right to force non-members of the community, non-residents, to pay simply because they were passing through or doing business there? So this was as I said earlier, this was a vehemently debated topic. It would seem that most Achronim held they do not generally have the right to do this. And many of them used very strong language about this. For example, you'll see some of the Achronim said that even those who justify imposing the Gabila for a noble purpose, for mitzvahs, ein zu tzedakah ela tzaaka, they said, in a play on words. This is not charity, this is an outrage. Similarly, there's a Tshuva in the Tshura Shai, who was very against this, at least in his case, and he said that, you can tell me it's a minhag, he said, this is a derech shekav shu listin, this is just highway robbery. The fact that you institutionalized it and it's a venerable practice, it's a venerable practice of highway robbery, he says. Simply taxing people who are coming from outside the city is unjust and illegitimate, and they have no right to do this. Churashai's case is actually a rather interesting case. He was discussing, the custom was in Europe, we know this from the Tshuva Sfarim, from the 19th century particularly, the custom was that a rav, a city rav, an official rav of a community, would receive Seder Kedushin fees for marrying off people in his community. And this was often a major portion of the rabbi's income. This is either explicitly stipulated as being part of his salary, or this is something he counted on, but often a major component of the rabbi's income, or even the primary source of his income, would be these fees for Seder Kedushin. And he would be entitled, basically, to the marriage fees, the Seder Kedushin fees, for anyone in his community who got married in his jurisdiction, and the rabbi of the next city would normally be entitled to the fees of anyone who got married in his jurisdiction. And we find in the Jewish farm there were often debates and disputes about this. And are you entitled to this village? Are you entitled to that village? Where does your turf end? Where does my turf start? It was a big deal. There's a lot of money involved, apparently. So the Chuvashai had a case where people were making a chasana, and they were resident of one city. For some reason, whatever reason, instead of making the chasna locally, they were making the chasna in an adjacent city. So the two rabbis had a disagreement. The rabbi in the city in which the chasna was to occur said, in my backyard, I get the money. The rabbi of where the couple came from, the families came from, said, it's my parishioners, I get the money. So the Churashai discusses, he's focusing on the question of whether the rabbi in the city in which the wedding is taking place has the right to demand Seder Kiddushin fees. And his answer is a pretty strong no, they do not, he does not. And he says, and even if the community would explicitly pass such an edict that anyone who gets married in our community, even if they are not members of the community, even if they are not local, must pay Seder Kiddushin fees to our rabbi, the Churashai essentially rules that is an illegitimate takana. As we mentioned earlier, his language is Derech Shekavshu Listim, they have no right to do this. And the Churashai explains that fundamentally, this that we find, going back to the Gemara and discussed heavily in the Rishonim and the Acharonim, this that we find that a community has the right to tax its members, those are the key words, its members. The right of a community is solely over its own members. A community has no right to impose its will over anyone who is not a member. The fact that someone is passing through, the fact that the wedding is taking place locally, that does not give the community the right to assess any fees on those participants. Even though, I guess, in law in general, a government does have the right to expect guests or people who are traveling through a country to follow the local laws. But for whatever reason, the Churashai doesn't treat local communal authority in such a way. He seems to assume that local communal authority does not extend to transients. He mentions the whole discussion of the earlier Achronim about the Gabila, and he says even those who said that the local community has the right to impose the Gabila, he says that's only the only rationale for that, the only possible justification for that, he says, is because the people coming in are eating away at the business. They're taking away business, they're taking away customers, they're taking some economic activity which by right should belong to the locals. That's why it's only fair that they should have the right to get some of that back in the form of the Gabila. But a family who's simply coming in and making a wedding, he says, Zen Adam Zela Chaser. If anything, I guess they're good for the local economy. They bring in people, they party there, they do business there, he says. They're not taking anything away from the locals, he says. So there's absolutely no basis, he says, for the community to try to impose its will on people from outside the city. As you'll see, this is actually a much debated point. My impression is that the strong preponderance of the poskim was against this, even for mitzvahs, ein zu tzedakah el tzedakah. There is a dissenting opinion, but it seems that was the minority. Most poskim, it seems, held that they do not have the right to impose their will on non-residents. Now, the makar of this whole discussion is the Tshuvas HaRashba, which the poskim bring. The Rashba is somewhat hard to understand. It's a fairly important and fundamental tshuva. We've seen fragments of it have been echoed and been refracted through the prism of the later poskim throughout our limud of Hasagas Gvul. But basically, the Rashba seems to understand that the entire right, potential right of a community to impose its will on outsiders in the form of a gabila, he doesn't use the word gabila, but in the form of taxes, would have to derive from its right to restrict their economic activity. That, in turn, is subject to the basic rules of the Gemara that the members of a city cannot restrict its own members from free economic activity, but they do have the right to restrict outsiders from coming in. And the Rashba says, therefore, they can issue an ultimatum to outsiders. They can say, either agree to abide by our rules and pay our taxes and make the contributions we levy against you, or don't engage in business here, you can't come in. But that's only insofar as they actually have the right to block them from economic activity. In a case where they have no such right, or certainly in the case of the Churashai, where there is no question of economic activity, they're just coming here for a wedding, or even in cases where there is economic activity going on, that they have the right to do that. So, for example, as we discussed in an earlier talk, many of the Sephardic Achranim said that within the Ottoman Empire, within Turkey, Greater Turkey, all the laws of Yerushalayim don't apply, Hasagas Gvul don't apply, because the king says that there should be free commerce and free trade, certainly within his empire, and there are no hakpadas between cities, so nobody has the right to ma'ake from one city to the next. And therefore, the Achronim say, the early Sephardic Achronim say, many of them, that the Gabila is also illegitimate with regard to people who are coming from one Turkish city to another, because since, in terms of economic activity, one city cannot restrict the other city from coming in and doing business. That's the point the Rashba makes. He brings the Gemara about the karga, and the Rashba explains that the whole significance of paying karga, the taxes locally, not paying taxes, is because all these things derive from governmental rights, and if the government does not makpid and says, everyone do whatever you want, that's fine. And therefore, the Gabila would be illegitimate too. From one Malchus to another Malchus, some of the Achronim say, if people in Turkey want to levy a Gabila on those coming from outside Turkey, that might be better. But within Turkey, within a country where there's no right to ma'akev on economic activity, similarly, there'd be no right to levy the Gabila, to levy taxes. And that seems to be, again, the consensus of most poskim, albeit not all. Another topic we're going to touch on this week, we'll speak about this more later in the week, I hope, and maybe next week also, is a very provocative, very controversial ruling of the Marik. The Marik talks about the general Isurim and Arsugya of Yari Lomnus, of Asagas Gvul. And as we know, the halach in general is permissive. In general, people are allowed to compete freely, and except for certain cases where he's coming from outside the city or where he's shutting him down entirely, different types of predatory competition. In general, competition is okay, and people cannot be ma'akev against others. We're going to see in the Ramah, at the end of our siman, same thing applies to the free movement of people. Local residents can't generally block other people from moving in, even if they have reasons why it's problematic for them. They can't. It's a free country. People have the free world. People have the right to move wherever they want. Marik comes along and says, everything in our siman, all we keep saying things are mutter, you can't be ma'akev. All that means is that you can't sue in Beis Din, you can't use Beis Din on the halacha and the Shulchan Aruch to force somebody else to do what you want. However, says the Marik, if you have political power, if you have the ear of the local strongman, you have the right to use governmental power to block people from coming in, to block people from engaging in business. That's your right. Mi ma'akev al yadei. Marik says you can do whatever you want. Kol dal gvar, basically, a person has the right to appeal to the local baron to say, please don't let anybody else in. Please help me retain my monopoly on this business. No one else should be able to do this. The Marik feels very strongly this way. The Marik actually goes so far as to say, kol dayin delo don hachi lav dainahu. And that's what the Marik holds. Now, this is obviously a very provocative thing to say. In halacha, in general, we're conditioned, and correctly so, that Mesira is a terrible thing, Arkos is a terrible thing, even in cases where you have the right to force your will upon another involving the Gentile, the non-Jewish authorities, is bad. Many Achronim were very perplexed, very taken aback by this Marik. Nevertheless, many Achronim did say that, what can we do? As provocative as the Marik is, mi yavo acharei ha-melech. The Beis Yosef already says that Varav Tmuin, and even though Marik said it, the Beis Yosef wasn't so differential. He said, Melech HaShemayim, ein mas upon him medaber. Other Achronim said, what are we going to do? L'maisa, the Marik was the Marik, and mi yavo acharei ha-melech, then ein mashir n'tari l'achar misa. Marik ruled this way, and we're not going to disagree. And throughout the postgame, we'll see some of the postgame this week, maybe some more sources next week. Throughout the postgame, there's been a healthy debate over whether we accept this Marik or not. One interesting tshuva, the Pnei Moshe, talks about a case where there were several competitors. Several of these competitors, some were legitimate, some had legal right to do what they were doing, some did not. The ones who did invoked the government to shut down their competitors. Now, Pi Halacha, Asagas Gvul, they're all local, they're all allowed to compete. The fact that one of them wasn't abiding by the law, that's between him and the government. Well, it doesn't give you any right. But Moshe says, that's fine. You have the Marik, a person is allowed to, in the struggle for economic dominance and money and power, a person has the right to invoke the secular government. He has the right to get it to shut down his competitors, and that's fine. Other poskim disagreed very strongly. We'll see further certain distinctions. Some poskim distinguish between taking something away from somebody or merely blocking him from engaging in some business. And we'll see one or two sources this week and hopefully some more sources next week, more about whether we really accept this halacha and some more of the parameters of this ruling of the Marik.